Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of Let's Talk Security Testing, the podcast where we talk all things security testing. I love that line. I really like that line. Today we're going to talk about vibe coding. Vibe coding. Anyone that knows me knows my love for coining new terms for things.
I detect some sarcasm?
Maybe a little bit. But I'm going to roll with it today for the podcast. Vibe coding, it's all the rage. And I'm sure there's 50 other podcasts talking about how good vibe coding is, how bad vibe coding is from a development standpoint. But naturally, there are obvious security concerns. I guess to kick off with my perspective, I see two things. I see, one, is it coding more securely? Now, we would not be in a job if people were already coding securely. So we're not necessarily saying that we're working from perfect, which is kind of always the case with these podcasts. What we've got now is okay. It could be better, could be worse. There is obviously a question as to whether vibe coding, coding with AI, whatever you want to call it, is a more secure way of doing development than traditional coding. Mm-hmm. But for me, there's a second point that isn't spoken about anywhere near as often, which is amount of code written, amount of development done, amount of features built. If we are saying through vibe coding, we can develop much faster, build better systems, build systems for lesser cost, you know, why else would you do it? Surely that's going to introduce more vulnerabilities. I know for a fact if we tripled the size of our dev team and built three times as many features, yes, we're going to introduce more vulnerabilities than we were before, like naturally. So two things, I guess, speed of development causing more naturally and quality of code compared to traditional. Are they two clear separate points?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, I think there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt sowed about vibe coding, and there is a lot of research, actually, to be fair, that seems to back it up at a simple level. You know, there's plenty of research if you go out there that describes the rate of vulnerabilities or the likelihood of vibe coding to introduce vulnerabilities. However, the question isn't how many vulnerabilities vibe coding introduces. It is how many vulnerabilities vibe coding introduces compared to traditional development. And exactly like you say, there are two factors in there, quality and quantity, both of which are going to affect it. You know, if it's less likely to introduce a vulnerability, let's say it's 20% less likely to introduce a vulnerability, but it produces 50% more code, you will therefore end up with more vulnerabilities than you traditionally did. I had an argument on LinkedIn the other day with somebody talking about how vibe coding is, you know, riddled with vulnerabilities. And I was like, I've been in security testing for over a decade now, and I rarely find anything that isn't riddled with vulnerabilities.
You must get served different stuff to me than on LinkedIn, because all I get served is how amazing vibe coding is, and how if you want secure code, you just tell it to write secure code. I'm also connected to more sales and marketing professionals than you are.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the cybersecurity practitioners being particularly big fans of being, you know, naysayers or frowning on the latest technologies. I'm guilty of it myself, so I'm not pointing any fingers. But yeah, certainly if I go on LinkedIn, it is casting shade on what I think is quite an interesting technology.
Yeah. No, I get that. But I guess in typical fashion to this podcast, we can talk about it, we can debate it, but let's test it. Tom, can you perform a little bit of vibe coding for us here?
I can give it a shot. I've only ever been doing this since about 4 p.m. yesterday when I had a little play round, and actually it seemed to do okay. So It'll take
just explain what it is that you're going
to
do.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think we need to come up with something, right? What a project of some description, something for us to vibe code. I think a web app probably makes sense for the purpose of this, but
yeah.
What should that web app do? Let's try and keep it fairly simple.
But... Oh right, okay, fairly simple. Mm-hmm. What like I don't know. My brain's just telling me to like rent a dog.
Rent a dog, sure. Okay, because I'm
rentadog.com.
I'm going to choose a language that I broadly understand because it'll probably make this process a little bit easier, but let's go with Python. So write me a Python-based web app for people to be able to rent dogs.
Do it with a straight face, please. And it's a legitimate industry.
And it says, sure, we'll do that. It suggests creating a directory for the dog rental app. Now it's creating a requirements file, all the legitimate sort of ways that you might initiate a project. It does ask me to review and accept it all, but I think that kind of defeats the point of this. So this, what I'm going to do
defeats the objective of this so, scientific test.
So,
not designed
thankfully,
to play tricks
there
on
is
bytecode.
A nice friendly button at the bottom of this that says accept all. So it's working its way through the code at the moment. We'll give it a minute and then
it's a fast programmer, isn't it?
Once it's done, well, yeah, I mean, it's already, I don't know if you can see this, it's already built out a folder structure, it's made the main app.
I guess, just for clarity, we're not experienced podcasters. There are going to be people, Tom, that are just listening and not looking. So do you want to just explain what's going on your screen?
Yeah, yeah. So there is, it's created a page for, homepage or a number of static pages and templates, the main app program. It's describing on the right hand side exactly what it's writing, explaining to me why it's writing the things, creating a login page, a register page, an index homepage, a base page.
Sorry, I'm just going to go on my screen and just register this on Company's House.
It's. well, we did this once a long time ago, before vibe coding was even a term, where there was just the three founding members of Citix, wasn't it? And now I'm not a developer, you're not a developer, but we do have Matt, who is a capable developer, but not necessarily... wasn't necessarily going at the speed that we wanted him to, because he wanted the thing to be neat and tidy, and we wanted a build fast and break things kind of a prototype. So we had a go 3 years ago at typing in to build the thing that we were asking him to build, and it just about managed to do something, didn't it? This isn't the first time we've had a go. It's created all of the stuff you might expect. So it's created CSS style sheet, it's created home pages. I think it's also given me, right at the very end, a complete summary, a bullet point list. It's created a Flask application with user authentication, database models, routes for functionality, modern responsive Bootstrap-based templates, blah, 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 blah. It tells me how to run it. It tells me what I need to do. Again, not going to read it, just going to click accept all. And then now I'm going to tell it to run the application. I don't know if this will work. But we'll see. Here we go. It's given me the command to run that. Command Python not found. So it's going to tell me to run a different command. And now let's activate the environment and install the packages. Sure. Let's do this.
I mean, this is a great advert for vibe coding so far. I promise, for the security naysayers listening, we are going to get to the testing of it at some point.
But
so far I think it's really important to stress, because so often in security we are focusing on security, and it's not about that. You know, business, in order for businesses to run, they have to make a profit. Security is not the most important thing to a business. I'll say it again. Security is not the most important thing to a business. The most important thing, more often than not, is making a profit. So it's really important to look at these tools and say, if you're going to try and tell your CTO, CEO, whoever it is, that vibe coding is not appropriate for your business, you're going to have a tough job when, as you can see, Tom has just managed to build a web app in,
less than 5 minutes. Yeah.
So for those not listening, for those listening and not watching, Tom, can you just describe what it is that we're looking at on your screen?
What we're looking at is a homepage of a website. At the top, it's got a nice little icon of a dog and the name of the site called Dog Rental. There's a login button, there's a register button, and there's a couple of dogs. There's Max and there's Luna. They've got pictures, they've got their age, they've got their price per day. It's even got a nice little copyright notice at the bottom.
I know which one you're picking.
Yeah, I think
you're taking Luna all day, aren't you?
I'm more of a Max.
Funnily enough, Tom used to own a German Shepherd, which is Luna, and I currently still own a Labrador, which isn't too far from a Golden Retriever, which is Max.
And just to say, it's got a bio for each of the dogs, and it describes the breed for each of the dogs, and it matches the images and everything. Anyway, so let's log into Rent. I don't actually know how to use this because I didn't build it, so I'm just gonna register first. Type in a username. What should we be? I'll be Thomas the Dog Man. I don't know. And then, in fact, let's go.
Damn, that was gonna be my username.
Let's give my email and let's go password 123 and click register. Registration's apparently successful, so let's try and log in. Thomas the Dog Man, and then password. Because I'm a pen tester, let's just try a dodgy password and see what happens. Apparently, username or password is invalid, but the Dog Man and password 123 !! And we're logged in.
Brilliant.
So it's a fully functional application.
So, should we? Now we're logged in. Tom, I can see Tom already. He's now got his pen tester brain on. So, Tom, before you think any more, can we just explain what it is that we're going to do now as part of this test?
Well, so we've got an application. We've got some functionality within the application. There's not very much functionality, but I think that what we've got is probably enough to go on to be able to have a go at exploiting some basic vulnerabilities, right? See if this application is vulnerable to any of the kind of classic OWASP top 10 kind of issues that we might see in a test built by even a human. So I think that the first thing that I'm going to do is look for cross-site scripting. So instead of Thomas the Dog Man, I'm going to go with Thomas script alert hacked script, and register an account. So this is creating an account where my username includes a piece of malicious JavaScript with the hope that, or the hope as a pen tester that, did that say that I think that said that was already in use, so I don't think it will work, but effectively the hope that the page will render that JavaScript, and therefore you've got a cross-site scripting condition. So let me try that again. So
just while Tom's doing this, for anyone listening that thinks this is staged or that we've planned this in advance, I can assure you that we have not. There is a very real possibility that this is going to be a secure system that Tom's not going to be able to exploit or compromise. This is a fair test.
Thomas 1 and Thomas script. So it's mitigated the cross-site scripting vulnerability there. So I can, let's inspect this and see how it's done that. Yeah, so it is encoding it as HTML entities, which is the best practice way of being able to mitigate a cross-site scripting vulnerability.
Right. Vibe coding has passed the cross-site scripting check.
Okay, so I'm logged into the application. Another thing that I might check as a pen tester is whether or not the cookies use the best practice header. So it can't use the secure best practice flag, sorry. So it can't use the secure flag, which is a flag that says only transmit this cookie over HTTPS, because the site doesn't have HTTPS. It's just a local version of the site. It also doesn't use the same site attribute. It's not using some of the security flags, and I might flag that up as an issue. Although in fact it looks like it's using JWTs for session management, which is interesting. So that's probably going to be my next place to look. Actually, that might be a bit boring to do in a live hacking demo. I tell you what,
Tom's just desperate to just own this thing really fast.
Well, let's add in some more functionality to play with. There's very little here to play with. I could try a SQL injection. I don't know what the functionality within here is going to allow me to do, but okay, so that basic classic SQL injection in the authentication didn't work. It's quite good in that it asked me to confirm everything. I don't read all the individual things, but one thing that it particularly likes to do is make me approve before it runs any like operating system commands. So there is still a conscious sort of human in the loop before doing anything too dangerous. In theory. In reality, I'm clicking yes on everything. Which is, you'd hope, not what most developers would end up doing, right? I think that's one of the interesting things about this, is the question of how much are we assuming that vibe coding is about supporting a developer versus replacing a developer.
I think it's certainly a leap towards replacing. It's certainly not replacing a developer, but it's a where we were having Copilot before, which was definitely assisting a developer. I think vibe coding is much closer to replacing, given that neither people around this table are developers right now.
So we tried to do a few manual techniques, nothing particularly fancy. It held up against some basic cross-site scripting. Let's try and run an automated DAS tool against it. So let's pull up Burp Suite, which is a popular DAS scanner and a whole suite of tools that are used by penetration testers. And let's click to scan the application. I think probably for the purposes of this, let's go with the fast version, because otherwise we'll be waiting for ages. And see what it's able to pick up. So here we go. It's starting to pick up some vulnerabilities already. Clear text submission of passwords, I think we can probably forgive, because this is not necessarily the live hosted version of the application. This is just a sort of local dev environment. You're always going to see that. Same with unencrypted communications. Cross-domain scripts being included. Let's take a quick look at that. So this type of vulnerability effectively describes pulling in scripts from third-party locations without necessarily validating the integrity of those scripts, which means that if they change later down the line, you could end up with a situation where you are being compromised because they've been compromised. It's kind of a supply chain attack. I can see here an example of a cross-domain script that's being included without sub-resource integrity, without validating the it hasn't been tampered with. Classic kind of vulnerability, probably informational risk, realistically. Clickjacking is another vulnerability. So this one is the idea that you might be able to embed the page in an iframe inside your page and then overlay things on top to trick a person into like clicking on links inside the site, interacting with the site without knowing it. So if you can imagine, you have the whole website embedded into your website, and then you put big buttons over the top, you say to people, you know, click on this and you'll win a prize, and they think they're interacting with your website when in fact they're actually authenticated and interacting with the target site, in this case the dog booking site. Cross-site request forgery, here we go, here's another interesting one. So the password reset functionality apparently has a cross-site request forgery vulnerability within it. Let's take a quick dig into that one. Yeah, I mean, there's no custom headers being set that I can see when performing the request to reset a password. There's no custom headers being set, in fact, right across the site as far as I've seen. And there's also no single-use number that's used to confirm that the user who's interacting with it is actually the legitimate user. So basically what this means is that I, with a malicious site, could introduce a form into my site that sends data to this target application and interacts with it in ways that as a user I might not want a third party to be interacting with the site, adding in comments, logging out, changing passwords, that kind of stuff. Now, it's the DAS tool has pulled it up on the reset password functionality, which I'd argue isn't really a legitimate functionality to target, because as unauthenticated functionality, the risk of cross-site request forgery is kind of non-existent. But the implication of there being cross-site request forgery on this page is that it's likely to also exist in authenticated functionality as well. Okay, so while the scan is running in the background, let's have a go at some of this other functionality. So I can leave a review here for Luna. Again, anytime you've got user input, there's always the prospect of cross-site scripting. So I'm going to leave a review for Luna of 5 stars and no cross-site scripting. Okay. I'm trying to think of ever interesting vulnerabilities to be able to exploit that.
Is there nothing with Burp Suite with the capturing the session? You're using Burp Suite to capture the.
Well, I was using Burp Suite to intercept to be able to make the cross-site scripting attempt easier, but it's correctly encoding the output. So the risk is very unlikely. I mean, I could spend hours digging into the site and the minor details of it, but I think realistically, that what we've observed so far is that
it's pretty good.
It's considering in multiple different input fields the risk of users providing malicious payloads, and it's mitigating them. It's not doing some classic mistakes in terms of security best practices, and there's sort of load informational risk issues as part of that. But what I think this is a good piece of evidence for is that maybe these tools are not expressly worse than people at introducing vulnerabilities.
Well, look, you know, I think in the interests of rounding this off, I mean, look for the audience. We don't script or stage these tests. This is a live one. Naturally, there's going to be some edits here, but I'm looking to my right, and we've been here for 40 minutes now. So I think what we're going to do, is let's summarize what we've learned here, and then I think we need to come back for part two. I think we need to come back with a vengeance, maybe with a bit more of a plan, and ask it to put a bit more functionality in and then let Tom really have at it. I think that would be useful. We can maybe even bring another guest on to talk to me whilst you hack it, and then you can maybe come back with your evidence. Let's have a think about that offline. But to summarize, it built the system pretty damn quick, off a very simple brief that you wouldn't even need a developer to build. Now, a lot of businesses are going to find that level of productivity gain hard to overlook from a building new features, new systems, new products perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From a security standpoint, it's not as bad as we thought. You were thinking, bit of vibe coding, spin up a system, CSRF, cross-site scripting, in the bag, call the baby ugly. That hasn't happened, has it?
It hasn't happened, and in fact, that's the kind of thing that, you know, if you ask a I bet you if I asked any of my very capable, experienced development team, just spend half an hour, knock together an application, they probably wouldn't get that far, and certainly at least one of the three or four issues that I've tested for today would probably surface. If I gave them 3 or 4 days, I'd be surprised if some of those issues would surface. But I think what was impressive is the fact that those kinds of vulnerabilities, without any explicit prompting, weren't introduced, even when I think the longest prompt that I gave the whole system was maybe 10 words.
Yeah. So it's not as bad as we thought it would be. And there's naturally some obvious secure coding practices that have been built into the way that it's naturally constructing the code.
Yeah, at the end of the day, right, large language models are all trained on a vast, vast quantity of existing data. So the idea that they will be more vulnerable than what we've currently got, I think it's, I don't really understand the logic behind it. They will statistically be about the same level of vulnerable because they will have about as many vulnerabilities as the code that they were taught to based on.
So I think that I think we'll round it there for today, but we're definitely coming back for part two. This time, I think what saved the vibe coders is that the system's very simple, very basic, and there's not much there to exploit. Let's try it with some more advanced functionality. Let's put a file upload in there. Let's put a few more input fields in, some that are maybe a bit trickier to build, and there's some more gotchas. And that's all we've got time for today. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Bye now.